Today, I just want to get my coffee beans and leave. I cross my arms and step back. I'm in a hurry. Casimira frowns.
What's wrong, Sparrow? You're not your cheerful self today.
She studies the bandage on my arm, a scrap of one of Evander's many black tunics.
Something happen I should know about?
The concern in her voice melts my anger faster than a flame on wax. I stretch out my injured arm, holding very still while she peeks under the bandage.
Doesn't take a healer's sight to tell this isn't infected.
She releases me, brushing away a strand of dark hair that's fallen across her forehead.
What's really hurting you?
I reach for Casimira's hand, telling her everything that happened last night, starting with Master Nicanor's death. I've barely finished describing how I cut my arm too deep when Casimira winces, pressing a hand to her forehead. She sways a little, so I steady her with an arm around her shoulders.
What is it?
I whisper.
She wouldn't want any of her crew overhearing that she's not feeling well. They'd give her more lip than usual, and they're hard enough to control as it is.
Do you need me to fetch a healer?
But as Casimira rubs her temples, I realize what's ailing her.
You've been changing the winds again.
I try to keep the worry from my voice, but I can't help it. She nods, and the slight motion makes her grimace.
There was hardly a breeze to speak of on our latest run. I had to shift things in our favor to get home before His Majesty could miss us, if you get my drift.
Cass, you should rest more often.
Hire another weather mage to do half the work or something.
A shadow crosses her face at my suggestion.
Another weather mage? There are only three in Grenweir, so far as I know. Besides me, she adds, a hint of pride in her tone. And they all have jobs that pay better than anything I could offer. Maybe I could train someone. But let's be honest, how many blue-eyed people actually bother with all the training needed to become a necromancer, assuming they're even chosen to try?
I sigh. She's made her point. There's me and Evander, and our teacher, Master Simbri. Then there's Jax and Simeon, who trained under Master Nicanor. As far as I know, we're the only necromancers in Grenweir City. Perhaps in the whole province. Each of Carthia's 11 provinces have a few blue-eyed mages, but that's still not many. And from what I understand, weather mages are even rarer and harder to train into masters.
Just take it easy for a while, all right?
I squeeze Casimira's hand before dropping it. She grins.
No promises.
I hesitate, then plunge ahead.
Can I ask you something strange, Cass?
No questions too strange for me. Go ahead.
She takes a seat on a low stack of crates. Her head must still be bothering her.
What's out there?
I nod toward the harbor. Casimira presses her lips together as her eyes crinkle at the corners, like she's holding back a laugh.
Water. Lots and lots of water. No place for a sparrow to land.
I frown at her dismissal. I've never wanted to know anything about her journeys before, but after last night, I can't get Evander's plan out of my head. This is serious. When Casimira's amusement fades, I ask, what about the ports where you get the coffee and spices? What are the people like there?
The people are just people. Their skins are brown and black and white, like Carthians. Some wear bright silks, and some wear rags. They like to eat and dance and gamble, and have a romp. It's the same everywhere.
She tries to smile, but winces and rubs her temples again.
They talk in different tongues. It startled me at first, but we figured each other out pretty quick. Coins for goods.
And the land? Are there shores full of coffee beans?
This time, Casimira can't contain her laughter.
Not exactly.
Her expression turns thoughtful.
But why the sudden need to know?
I'm sure you'll find out soon enough, I grumble, thinking of Evander's raven. Wondering if he sent it after all that was said and unsaid last night.
A glance at the sun tells me it's nearly time to meet Evander and Master Simbri. I drop my voice to a whisper in case any of the dock workers have keen ears.
Can you get me the goods now? I have to be somewhere.
She nods and disappears into the hold, leaving me alone on deck. As I wait, I skim my gaze along the shoreline, where tangles of crimson seaweed from the ocean's depths have snagged on rocks. The seaweed's red hue makes my mind flash to Nicanor's final moments. I lean against the ship's rail and try to dredge up a happy memory to push back the darkness. But my stubborn brain is stuck on the horror of last night.
What's the matter?
Casimira demands when she returns with the coffee beans.
You look like you've seen a shade.
My face hot, I stammer. No, not today, anyway. I force a grin, because Casimira is giving me a deep, searching look, and she needs to be worrying about her health, not mine.
And neither will you, so long as you keep floating in this old bucket.
Casimira clutches at her heart.
Old? Bucket? Master Necromancer, you must be thinking of some other ship. Not the vessel that brings you your beloved coffee beans. Not the one that survived not two, not three, but
6 massive storms with hardly a scratch, I finish for her, grinning effortlessly now. Casimira has that effect on people. Filled with the calm only friends and coffee can provide, I dash off the ship, bound for my meeting with Master Simbri.
It's only when I'm well out of sight of the paradise that unease steals over me again, and I jump at every shadowed alley and wind-tossed tree I pass.
Chapter 6 The graveyard behind Noble Park is the size of several manor homes put together. But I know exactly where to find Master Simbri once I've leapt the wrought iron fence and landed among the broad cypresses and oaks. The caretaker's cottage. Like all retired necromancers, Simbri took up residence at a graveyard when Evander and I completed our training. Now she tends the land inside the iron fence and polishes the marble monuments of dukes and counts and barons' families. Those who, for whatever reason, weren't raised from the dead. Those nobles whose spirits have left the deadlands for whatever lies beyond. The cottage is unlocked when I arrive. Sun streams in from the many windows. Yet the air turns cold as I spot them. A bouquet of wildflowers on Simbri's dining table. Hot pink rhododendrons. Tiny white clusters of dogsbane. And even a few of those rare bright red blossoms
star glories.
My pulse quickens at the sight.
Where did those come from?
I demand, unable to rip my gaze from them just yet.
If they were growing over any of the graves outside, we're in trouble.
Flowers only bloom over graves when the spirits have a message to send to our world.
Part of a retired necromancer's duty as grave minder is to watch for flowers, then send a raven to the right person when there's a message.
Where? I ask again, breathless. They were all over, on too many graves to name, my friend Jack says from beside the hearth, as if coming out of a daze. Simeon and I saved a few and burned the rest.
My hand instinctively creeps toward my sword. Not even the cottage seems safe now, knowing what the flowers on the table mean. Danger, deception, death.
Master Simbri was called away this morning, apparently, Simeon adds from the back of the cottage, striding to the hearth with four steaming mugs of tea clutched in his hands.
Jax and I got a raven last night, telling us to be here at noon. But when we came in, we found a note pinned under her kettle and flowers growing all over the graves. So at least she got the warning too.
He nods to a scrap of parchment on a nearby table.
I skim the note, hardly taking in a word, crinkling it in my fist as my gaze shifts from the flowers to my friends beside the hearth.
You're late, Sparrow.
Jax leans back on his elbows, gazing up at me with his crystal blue eyes and not even a shadow of his normal grin. He's warming his bare feet near the flames, his sword balanced on his lap as he stretches across Master Simbri's woven carpet. Dressed in his necromancer's tight black shirt and trousers, his muscles bulging, he looks completely out of place in the dainty white stone cottage.
We were getting worried. If you didn't show up soon, I'd have started looking for people to kill.
I shiver. Knowing Jax, he's not kidding. Sitting rigidly beside him, Evander accepts a mug of tea from Simeon with a murmured thanks. The sound of his voice, though it's strained, settles around me like an embrace.
What kept you?
Evander asks, his words careful. He stares into the dwindling fire, a crease between his brows. Just getting something from Kismira. Hoping to ease the tension between us, I plop down in the narrow space between Jax and Evander, making a place for myself by forcing them to move or have their legs squished, like I've been doing for years. Jax's familiar grumble and Evander's familiar light touch on my back help the horrible events of last night seem farther away, like a bad dream, as I crunch down on a few of my ill-gotten goods. Though even coffee beans aren't exactly helping.
But you always say there's nothing coffee can't cure, Simeon says in slight alarm, handing me a mug and peering into my face, scrutinizing.
Who are you and what have you done with my sister? He tries to hide his pain behind a ghost of a smile, but I recognize the hollowness in his voice and eyes. Where Jax is foul-mouthed and surly, Simeon is always quick to crack a joke or smile.
That's what I used to think too, but after last night, I'm not so sure.
I yank on a lock of his sandy blonde hair, one of the many telltale signs we're not really brother and sister. But after being raised together in Death's Convent from the time we were toddlers, we're as good as family.
How are you holding up?
I'm worried about you.
Me?
Simeon takes a seat on Jax's other side,
cradling his own tea between his palms.
Whatever for?
The sparkle I'm so used to seeing in his baby blue eyes has faded, and a knot forms in my chest as he adds softly, I'm still here. Evander blows steam off the top of his mug, gazing deep within it, and says nothing. Jax gulps his scalding tea without hesitation. His thoughts are surely with Master Nicanor, who was like a father to him, trying to understand the extent of his loss. For a moment, as we sit together in a deep silence broken only by the occasional pop and hiss of the dwindling fire, I wish I could stay in this cottage with my friends forever. We've never received a warning from the Deadlands before, and I have no idea if it means we're up against more than a shade, or if we can handle it. We're not exactly seasoned warriors. We're just three orphans and one barren son who grew up without a father. The king's ideal necromancers, with no loved ones to distract us in the Deadlands, trying to keep each other sane both in and out of the spirit's realm. Jax spills his tea and spits a curse, breaking the silence. Simeon leaps up to help contain the mess. While they're busy, Evander and I exchange a look. He catches my fingers in his. Squeezing his hand, I silently let him know I don't want to fight anymore. Where did Simbri go anyway? I ask, her note still clutched in my hand. I could hardly read a word of it. The characters swam together on the page in my shock over the flowers.
Duchess Bevin needed her help, so she went to Ossley Province,
Jax grunts, wringing tea out of his tight shirt.
Seems the Duke's been missing from their manor in Dern City for 3 days. Went for an afternoon stroll and never came home. If the Duchess is lucky, the bastard wound up falling in a frozen lake.
Simeon shakes his head.
What?
Jax mutters when no one agrees with him.
Have you met him? He beats his wife. Maybe a few days under the ice will help him rearrange his priorities.
I don't see what Master Simbri will be able to do anyway. She's not a bloodhound.
Evander frowns into his tea.
People seem to think that just because we raise the dead, we can solve all their problems when the dead don't act exactly the way they want.
Everyone nods. It's not the first time we've complained about this. So what are we supposed to do about Master Nicanor's funeral? Delay it until she returns? I wonder aloud. And hunting down the shade that... Sparrow. We have more to worry about than just some shade. Simeon runs a hand through his shaggy hair. The circles under his eyes are dark as the bruises we used to give each other at sword practice. Even Jax looks ill. Almost like he did last winter after beating the black fever.
We went to Master Nicanor's cottage early this morning to find something nice to bury him in.
His voice is taut as he fights to keep it from wavering.
The place was wrecked. Papers everywhere. A smashed plate of supper on the floor. Scratch marks on the doorframe.
I shiver again. Could it have been a vandal? A farmer's son? I have to ask, even if it's unlikely. After all, Master Nicanor had just started tending the massive graveyard outside Grenweir City, the one used by merchants and wealthy farmers. A couple of boys messing around, looking for spare coins when they saw Master Nicanor had gone out for the evening?
Nice try, sister, Simeon leans forward. But I don't think so.
I can't think of anything that would cause Master Nicanor to go into the Deadlands alone.
I think he was taken against his will.
Exactly. Think about it. Who would he have needed to raise so badly that it couldn't have waited until Simbri could come with him?
Jax demands.
Why wouldn't he have just asked us to raise the person for him?
Okay. Let's assume someone forced him to go to the Deadlands against his will.
Evander's eyes are narrowed in thought.
Why did he come out alone then? What happened to the person who took him there? Everyone knows shades will devour anything in sight, so...
At the look on Simeon's face, he loses the thread of his words.
You don't have to watch what you say around us. We know what the shade did to Master Nicanor,
Simeon grimaces. And I reach behind Jax to pat his shoulder.
We were in our rooms at the palace when they brought him up. We saw the,
mangled body.
Jax finishes for him, unflinching. An outsider probably wouldn't guess he's in pain. But the way he's quietly grinding his teeth tells me he's just managed to channel it into quiet fury.
So I say we hunt this damn shade. Today.
Between the flowers on Simbri's table and the glimpse I had of a giant shade in the Deadlands Grove, I'm not sure we should go anywhere right now. Does anyone have a plan, then? One that doesn't involve us all dying? Evander looks up, his gaze unreadable.
Me, he says simply. I'll cut it to pieces, and then you all will burn it.
No one's better with a sword than Evander. There's no denying it. We both saw it, the monster that killed Nicanor. I describe what I saw in the shadows, how quickly it moved. It won't stand a chance against four of us, though. I hope I sound more confident than I feel.
If we can catch it, that is,
Evander whispers. Simeon leaps to his feet and starts pacing.
I don't think any of us should go into the Deadlands until Master Simbri's back. Killing the Shade won't explain why Master Nicanor's cottage was torn up. Maybe Simbri can help us get answers. There's so much about this I don't like,
Evander agrees.
And Simbri said to wait in her note. She'll be back tomorrow, in time for the Festival of the Face of Cloud.
Jax catches my eye and shrugs, his powerful shoulders bunching.
I still say we kill it now. If we wait for the Festival of Cloud, what's to keep us from waiting for the Festival of Moon 3 days later?
I almost grin. He's right. There's a festival in Carthia at least once a week, and not just for Vaya's five faces. The king observes all the festivals started before his reign. Celebrations honoring everything from the sea to marriages to red fruits. With the dead walking among us, reminding us of our mortality. And their very presence meaning a shade could attack at any time. It's no wonder we need an excuse to throw a raucous party every few days. The festival of olive and tomato is actually my favorite. But Vaya's festivals are always grandest.
Simbri might be mad for a bit, but she'll thank us when she calms down,
Jax insists, drawing me back to the present.
This monster murdered her partner. My mentor, damn it!
After a moment of quiet, he asks more calmly.
What do you think, Sparrow?
Three pairs of blue eyes watch me as I stall, thinking furiously. Like Jax, I think slaying and burning the monster will ease a little of everyone's pain. That is, if it doesn't kill us first. But Evander and Simeon have a point. There's more to what's happening than just a shade. And Simbri will help us figure it out. I say we wait for Simbri. That way we can attend the festival. I force a grin. One last chance to eat, drink, and generally make fools of ourselves. Just in case we don't all make it back from shade hunting alive. As the others talk among themselves, my gaze returns again to the flowers. The dead don't often send warnings from their world, which means something is seriously wrong. Danger, I understand. The Deadlands aren't exactly safe at the moment. The message of death, of course, is obvious. But deception? That worries me most of all. Chapter 7. The palace courtyards swarm with bodies tonight, both living and dead. King Wilding's most beloved citizens are all here for the Festival of Cloud. Painters and sculptors, poets and musicians, competing for attention as they show off their autumn-themed creations in the center courtyard where I stand with Evander. My heart changes rhythm to match the drums, harps, and tambourines that sound from all directions as I loop my arm through Evander's. "Help me look for Master Simbri!" I shout over the music and chatter. All of Noble Park seems to be here, along with the ever-growing Wilding family, the city's wealthiest merchants, and almost every mage from Grenwyr province. Evander puts his lips to my ear. "I would, if I could keep my eyes off you." We're supposed to dress in our finest for festival days, which means no comfortable black uniforms. And for me, that means letting Lyda's maids pin up my wavy hair into the most popular style of the past 200 years and stuff me into a pretty crimson dress with flowing skirts that make it impossible to wear my sword and belt. My lips are dabbed with rouge, which I always like, though I refused the crumbly brown powder they wanted to pat on my nose and cheeks. Evander's words should make me feel better, but they don't. Nothing has been able to ease the constant feeling of dread that's hounded me ever since I saw Master Nicanor die. Since the flowers from the graveyard spelled out a warning. Just a few feet in front of us, two obviously drunk Wilding nobles, Valoria's cousins, throw fistfuls of cake at each other's faces. Noble girls gathered around them giggle shrilly, seeming desperate to laugh off their nerves in the wake of Master Nicanor's death. And it's not just them. Everyone seems determined to get as drunk and happy as possible until they forget their sorrow over the necromancer forever ripped from their midst. A roaring sound and a burst of light to my left draw my gaze. The Sisters of Cloud have started the first of many bonfires, and children gather round with fistfuls of color-changing powder, all waiting their turn to make a little magic for the face of Cloud. With a flash, the column of flame stretching toward the sky turns blue. Another child steps forward. Another flash. The fire changes to a brilliant poppy red. Flash! Plum-colored fire pops and sizzles as onlookers cheer. Casmira would love this. She's likely dancing around a bonfire at one of the parties in the city below, with her crew and the rest of Grenwyr's citizens, toasting the king's eternal reign. But it seems a shame that Carthia's best weather mage wasn't invited to the grandest celebration. "Odessa! Evander!" We turn toward the voice, which seems to be coming from somewhere near the banquet tables. That's where most of the dead gather, piling their plates high with roasted fish and cold cuts of spiced wild boar imported all the way from Lorness, steaming mounds of whipped potatoes and blackened mushrooms. in their shrouds, it would be nearly impossible to tell the dead man cracking jokes beside the punch bowl from the one taking almost half the potatoes, if not for the ornate pins of copper or silver that denote their titles and often even show their family crests. The dead women sometimes wear pins too, though many prefer to paint their masks and don the most exquisite baubles they wore in life. There's a duchess I call Lady Emerald, because she adorns her shroud with nothing but the biggest, shiniest emerald choker necklace I've ever seen. I still haven't learned her real name. As two ancient dead merchantesses glide away with their plates, no doubt to eat in seclusion where they can lift their masks, Princess Valoria appears and waves us over. She must have been the one calling our names. The crowd parts to let us pass, some offering greetings, others bowing or waving.
I see you've found your glasses, Evander says when we reach the princess, making her grin. They look nice on you, Highness.
The delicate gold spectacles reflect the light of the bonfires as Valoria adjusts them behind her ears. They look even more polished than the opal and silver circlet in her hair.
I was hoping you'd be here.
She meets my eyes for a brief moment before dropping her gaze, then tucks a few wisps of her blonde hair back into her braided crown.
And I didn't have anything better to do.
I stare at her, more uncomfortable now than I was when I first squeezed myself into my party dress. Everyone in Gwenweir knows me, or knows of me. But I don't have many friends outside our circle of necromancers. Aside from Casimira, of course.
I finished it,
the princess adds in a whisper.
My latest, you know what?
That explains the smudge of dirt on her cheek and the black stain on the sleeve of her stunning red and gold beaded gown.
Maybe you can show us the you know what later when there aren't any dead around.
I venture cautiously, earning a smile from her. How have you been holding up since we saw you last?
The grapevines outside my room wilted the night we got back from the Deadlands. When I saw it the next morning, I knew it had to be death's blight.
Valoria frowns.
My mother planted those vines. She's so disappointed. See? That's my room. Just there.
She points to a distant domed spire, and I narrow my eyes to see it clearly. Though the dead can't reproduce, the palace gets bigger every year, with more wings added constantly to house all the wilding relatives and their children's children. When they aren't planning parties or painting scenery to keep busy, the living wildings are quite fond of making babies. There's a picture of the original palace hanging in the grand entryway, and it's definitely swelled with time and demand for more space.
You have your own tower,
I grin at the princess.
Not bad.
How'd you get so much space to yourself?
Did you have to fight 100 of your cousins for it?
Being the second living heir in line to the throne helps,
Valoria murmurs, her face burning.
Not that it matters, but my parents both died in the yearly black fever outbreak when I was young. My mother was raised. My father chose not to be.
She shrugs, but her eyes glisten.
Anyway, eldest grandfather will rule as long as I'm alive, so I don't have to worry about what a headache I'd have from wearing a heavy crown all the time. Besides, Hadrian would inherit before I did, as he's the oldest of the five living heirs.
Oldest and best looking, a smooth male voice says from behind me.
Dislike flashes in Evander's eyes, and his lip curls, leaving no doubt as to who's just put a hand on my waist.
Prince Hadrian, I say in the warmest voice I can muster when someone's touching me without my permission, and I have no authority to snap their fingers like kindling. Happy festival day to you.
If you really want to make it a happy one, Hadrian says, smiling in a way that shows off all his perfect teeth and makes his dark brown eyes shine brighter than the opals in his silver crown.
You'll come dance with me, Sparrow.
She's fine right here, Evander growls, then quickly shoots me an apologetic look. He knows I can speak for myself.
But he can never stay quiet when Hadrian is around. I thought that after 3 years of the prince's shameless flirting, Evander would learn to ignore it. But Hadrian has a way of getting under people's skin. I sidestep Hadrian's touch, positioning myself beside Valoria. If I try to bend and twist in this dress, it'll rip. And that would give King Wilding quite a shock.
My gaze darts between the golden-haired prince and Evander, who's gripping his sword hilt.
I'm glad at least one of us came to this party armed.
Maybe some other time, Highness.
One must always hold on to hope, Hadrian says good-naturedly.
He gives me a sweeping bow, the kind people usually reserve for King Wilding.
The mischievous gleam in his eyes softens as he straightens.
My condolences to you both.
He pauses to glance at Evander.
For Master Nicanor. Such a terrible loss. Though I suppose that's the risk of walking where only the dead should dwell.
That's why we normally travel there in pairs, Evander murmurs darkly.
But there are some suspicious circumstances around Master Nicanor's death, which we intend to investigate. I'm sure you'll help with that.
I had no idea. I was told it was an accident. Hadrian's dark eyes are round with sincerity.
Of course I'll help. Anything and anyone within these walls.
He gestures to the palace around us, suddenly more somber than I've ever seen him.
Is at your disposal, day or night. Simply say the word.
Evander looks at Hadrian a long moment, then grits out,
Thank you.
We appreciate it, Highness, I add, giving Hadrian a gracious smile I hope will take his mind off Evander's surliness. In the distance, someone calls Hadrian's name, and he turns toward the sound.
Ah, I've just spotted a lovely lady in dire need of a glass of wine. Can't leave anyone empty-handed on festival night, or I'm a rotten host. See you around, Sparrow.
With a wink, he disappears into a sea of black-shrouded figures and ladies in flowing silks of every autumn hue.
I think he actually likes you.
Valoria gives me a bewildered glance, seeming torn between amusement and revulsion at her brother's behavior.
And Evander, isn't that your mother he's talking to now?
Hadrian reappears near the bonfire, where he's already managed to find a glass of wine. He presses it into Lyda Crowther's delicate hand, drawing her away from the group of dead nobles with whom she was chatting. Even from a distance, her smile is unmistakable.
I'm sure she has the good sense not to utter any of what she told us over our midnight supper.
Evander says nothing, but kicks a chipped piece of cobblestone toward the fire.
Careful with that, a gruff voice says. You trying to blind me, Crowther?
Jax pushes through the crowd, the jagged rock Evander kicked grasped in his large fist. He's wearing his customary black, though he swapped his necromancer's uniform for a set of silk robes that make him look so uncomfortable, he'd probably rather be naked. He glances from Evander to Prince Hadrian and Lyda.
Or are your knickers in a bunch because the prince is moving in on your mother?
Guilty,
Evander holds up his hands, his anger fading at the sight of our friend.
Just trying to thin out the competition. Like there aren't enough dead people to raise in Grenweir.
Lucky for you both. Simeon's voice bursts from behind Jax's tall figure. I've brought Tahila with me. Using his bony elbow to clear a path through the crowd, Simeon appears with a raven-haired young man on his arm. They're both dressed in tailored pants and long-sleeved tunics, far more sensible than Jax's ridiculous formal robes. Who remembers this handsome rogue? Simeon's smile broadens as he adds, Daniel's just told me he's moving here for Mosley. Finally! And just in time, too. Daniel smiles at us all, his coal-lined hazel eyes sparkling despite a shadow of worry lingering behind them. Who knows what trouble Sai was getting into without me around?
All kinds, Jax deadpans. All the time.
He glances toward the banquet tables.
Think the dead left any of the undercooked meat for the rest of us?
Valoria raises her brows at that, and I lay my hand on her shoulder.
Princess Valoria, I'd like you to meet my friends. This is my almost brother, Simeon of Grenweir.
Simeon winks as I say his name. His boyfriend, the healer mage, Daniel Swancott. When his name is mentioned, Daniel makes a deep bow that's less flashy and somehow more sincere than Prince Hadrian's. And the brood, who prefers his meat still bleeding, is Jax of Lorness. Taking that as his cue to go fill up his plate, Jax nods to the princess before stalking toward the feast.
Sparrow, Daniel exclaims, taking my hands.
Everything he says has a musical lilt that always draws smiles from his listeners. I swear he should have been a bard.
Let me get a good look at you. It's always a treat.
I can't help but grin. Daniel's a treat to look at himself. With powder perfectly applied over his creamy alabaster skin and coal around his eyes painted on with an artist's skill. It complements his shoulder-length hair that's as black as Idrini ink and draws attention to his wide eyes.
I think I've already heard what happened here.
Daniel's brows knit in concern as he rubs a thumb over the long gash on my forearm. It was healed enough for me to leave the bandage off for the festival, but it's scabbed and puckered and far from pretty.
May I?
When I nod, Daniel lays a hand over the cut and narrows his eyes, no doubt using his hazel sight to check the extent of the damage beneath my skin. Evander and Simeon talk among themselves. Having seen Daniel at work so many times, the novelty's worn off. But Valoria peers over his shoulder with interest. Heat rushes up my arm. And when Daniel drops his hand, my skin is soft and whole again, with no evidence of the cut that would have otherwise left a scar.
You're the best. I give Daniel a warm smile of thanks.
He returns to Simeon's side, clutching his right hand to his chest, his fingers looking as frozen and twisted as the dried bird's feet kept in glass jars on apothecary shelves.
Temporary paralysis, Valoria says to herself. The price of a healer's magic.
What I miss?
Jax reappears with what looks like an entire serving platter, comically enormous compared to the plates intended for guests. As he dangles a scrap of boar meat above his lips, he spots Valoria, and a thoughtful expression crosses his face. He holds the meat out to her.
The best piece, Highness. It's yours if you want it.
Valoria blinks at the bloody scrap, then at Jax as he holds it out to her.
Oh,
Yes, thank you.
Her face turns redder than the meat as she takes it from him and swallows it in one unladylike bite.
Evander makes his way to my side and offers me his hand.
Would you care for a dance?
He keeps his voice carefully neutral, saving the tenderness for the moment our eyes meet. There are few things Evander likes better than dancing.
I grab his hand in answer. Let Lyda think what she will, if she's looking on with the rest. She can't keep us from having fun tonight,
when it could well be our last.
I understand your dress might rip if you spin around too much,
Evander grins, which makes his eyes shine.
But I'm willing to risk it if you are.
We hurry to an empty space on the flagstones, well away from the bonfire, but close enough to feel an occasional burst of heat when the wind blows. Daniel practically sweeps Simeon off his feet in their haste to join us. I tip my head back to the night sky. The moon and stars become a baffling whirl of lights as Evander spins me around and pulls me back to his arms again and again. For the first time in days, the weight on my shoulders is starting to ease. Dancing with Evander is like walking on air, but with the certainty of knowing he'll be waiting to catch me when I'm ready to come back down. I couldn't find Duke Bevan. Master Simbri breaks the spell, and Daniel, Simeon, Evander, and I all stop dancing and turn to face her. I expected to feel braver, ready to take on anything when Master Simbri returned. But our former teacher looks as defeated as she sounds, with circles under her eyes and strands coming loose from her waist-length braid. It's only been a week since I saw her last, yet there seems to be more gray than red in her hair now.
If he doesn't reappear within the month, she continues as we leave the dance floor and close in around her, joined almost at once by Jax. His living heir will inherit his fortune, home, and title.
Not the Duchess? I ask, surprised. Master Simbri shakes her head.
She'd rather not be raised again, now that her husband's gone. I don't understand it.
Her steel-blue eyes look faded, like whatever she's seen lately has leached the color from them.
She finally has a chance to live the way she never could, without that brute breathing down her neck and controlling her every move. And now, she'd rather stay in the Deadlands. I suppose that's one way to have peace, but...
What about Master Nicanor?
Simeon interrupts.
Do you know why he was in the Deadlands when he's supposed to be retired? Or why his cottage was wrecked?
No. That's why I wanted to talk to you all. To gather what you know.
Simbri bows her head. A familiar gesture. She doesn't want us to see her expression.
And I think it's better that I look into his death alone. It may not be my job to keep you all safe anymore. But I intend to try.
Not a chance,
Jax growls, his crystal eyes flashing.
That shade is mine. I'm coming to the Deadlands with you.
Me too, Simeon crosses his arms. As soon as the festival ends, we hunt. I glance at Evander, who shares my frown. Master Simbri's always had the answers to our problems. A book. A potion, a sharp but well-intentioned word of advice. Something about knowing she feels as lost as we do unsettles me worse than the memory of Nicanor's death. I wonder if we were ready for the title of master, or if anyone ever is.
Evander?
Jax locks eyes with his friend, then turns to me.
Sparrow, what do you say? 5 master necromancers against 1 shade? I know it won't bring Master Nicanor back or help us find our missing Duke, but...
He grins darkly.
It'll feel damn good.
Warren, Evander and I agree at the same time. The red, pink, and white flowers spelling out a warning in Simbri's cottage flash to mind, but I don't mention them. No one needs another reminder of the danger. Master Simbri twists the end of her braid around her fingers, a habit that's probably far older than me. I still don't know. If anything, she looks more troubled than she did before we promised to help. None of you are allowed to die before me. Understand? Unless I'm killing you myself for disobeying orders. That said, she gazes at each of us in turn. We can hunt together tomorrow at dusk. That gives you each time to change your minds and back out if you should come to your senses. Agreed? I exchange a glance with Simeon, and we both nod. Then Evander does too. Jax makes a grunting noise, his way of accepting terms he doesn't like. As if also an answer, a scream tears through the courtyard from somewhere behind us.
Hear that?
Jax cocks his head, grinning at Evander and elbowing him in the ribs.
That's the sound of your mother and Prince Hadrian making sweet love, Master Crowther.
Master Simbri shakes her head, scowling at Jax, and turns toward the sound. Her expression quickly changes, her eyes widening. Evander and I whirl around in unison, stumbling into the courtyard by way of the garden archway is a shade. One the size and height of an average man. Or it would be, if it wasn't hunched over, its bony knuckles dragging the ground as it shambles toward the party. Drawing his sword, Evander charges toward a group of young nobles cowering on the far side of the bonfire in the courtyard center. They're pressed against one of the palace walls, too stunned and full of wine to flee the shade that's alternately shuffling around and gazing off into the night. No doubt, seeking a gate to the Deadlands. Jax, Simeon, and I spring into action, guiding confused and frightened people toward the palace doors as the monster begins its hunt. It's a new shade, judging by the way it still looks and smells like a hunched, rotting corpse. Its face, only vaguely human, is sunken and skeletal, with black holes where its eyes should be. Its skin is ashen, dangling in tatters, its limbs in various states of decay. I have to fight not to gag as it turns toward me and seems to meet my gaze with its empty eye sockets. Then it shrieks, its jaw unhinging as it reveals a mouth full of sharp yellow teeth that devour bodies and spirits alike. The creature bounds toward me, passing Evander and the frightened nobles, giving the bonfire a wide berth. Then the wind shifts, and the shade pauses, sniffing the air in the young noble's direction. Its cracked lips curl with what can only be thirst. Releasing a snarl, the monster changes course and stalks back toward them. The more corpses and spirits shades devour, the taller and stronger they become. This party will be like a buffet for the hungry creature, and then we'll have an even bigger, harder-to-kill problem on our hands. Heart hammering, I feel instinctively for my blade, but my hand closes over layers of soft skirt in place of my weapon.
I don't have time for this. Evander needs backup now. Glancing hurriedly around for something sharp, my gaze lands on the feast tables. I grab a knife from an empty platter just as Jax and Simeon run to Evander's side, their blades drawn.
Get the wildlings into the palace! Master Simbri shouts over the din. We need fire!
Someone cries out. Then, on the ground near the snarling creature, a figure crumples in the grass. Some poor soul is dead. Raising his sword, Evander attempts to create a barrier between the stunned wilding relatives and the shade. It releases a low growl, like a hound relishing the moment before a kill. Its skin, cracked and oozing, reeks of decay so strongly that the stench assaults me from halfway across the courtyard. The nobles scatter at last, momentarily confusing the shade as they run around the roaring bonfire like a bunch of startled geese. A few trip over their own skirts, while others kick spilled goblets out of their paths. A frightened boy in a gray servant's vest, running hard on their heels, collides face first with a painting of the face of Cloud. Leaping, the shade snaps his neck with a quick twist, making a gleeful, gurgling sound as the boy drops to the ground. Sometimes they like to eat corpses, and sometimes they just like killing. A girl near my side heaves a sob, snapping me out of a daze. I throw the knife back down. Blades will slow the monster, but even hacking it into bite-sized pieces of flesh won't kill it. It'll pull itself back together and keep eating corpses until someone sets it ablaze. As the palace guards stream into the courtyard, taking aim with crossbows, and as my friends and I struggle to keep the panicked partygoers away from the shade, I realize that someone will have to be me. I sprint toward the open door on one end of the courtyard, where Master Simbri and Daniel are shepherding nobles inside to safety. I'm about to grab a torch from the brackets beside the doorway, when a sound freezes my blood. Beloria's scream. Snatching up a torch, I turn around, dashing toward the princess. The shade has backed her into a corner on the opposite side of the courtyard. Valoria scratches vainly at the stone walls behind her, grinding her nails to bloody stubs as she tries to climb to safety. But there's nothing to hold on to, and the shade is giving a telltale growl that means it's about to pounce. Evander, reaching Valoria first, plunges his blade into the shade's side. Simeon and Jax follow, charging it as it strikes Evander down, barely managing to nick its flesh before it casts them aside. I dodge terrified stragglers as they run for the safety of the palace walls, determined to reach that distant corner in time to help. A gust of autumn wind whips the warmth of the festival bonfire onto my face as I bolt toward my friends. The shade flicks its blackened tongue over dry lips, seemingly enjoying the way the princess raises her bloodied fists like she's prepared to fight to the death. It's distracted. Good. Time to make my move. Darting between the shade and Valoria, I brandish my torch as close to the monster's face as I dare, startling it into taking a step back toward the bonfire. I lunge again, sparks from my torch kissing the shade's putrid skin, and it takes another clumsy step backward. The shade snarls, a bony fist curled at its side. It seems to want to grab the torch from me, but it's too new and stupid to be confident in its own speed and strength. I snarl back as I shove the torch closer, sending smoke up the monster's decaying nose. With a deafening screech,
The shade stumbles into the fire. I quickly step back, but as the monster falls,